now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Gabriel Marcotti and I thank you for joining us. In the studio with me, it's a man who played against the Invincibles on the last day of the season. And he could have altered the course of history. But no, he did not. It's James Scowcroft. And down the line, you know him as the chief football correspondent for The Times. I know him as maybe one of the top five most famous K's that I know. It's Ollie K. And since I know you're wondering, I would assume that Richard K is more famous. Certainly Celia K. All these people, by the way, are related to him. Alex K. Jelski, who's our boss at the Times. Peter K., the comedian you guys all find so hilarious, right?
Is this the cutting room floor?
No, I'm checking any of these people really related to you. Anyway, we digress because later on we'll be picking the official Game Podcast team of the season in the Premier League, as well as doing a little exercise inspired to me by somebody on Twitter. But first, let's talk about the final act of the Premier League campaign. And we're going to start at St. Mary's with the Centurions. Now, Ollie, they're called Centurions because they got 100 points, correct? And you call Centurions people who get 100 runs in cricket, right? That's the logic? Nothing to do with the original, nothing to do with the city of Centurion in South Africa, and nothing to do with the original meaning of the word either, right?
I think the original meaning was connected to the number 100, but kind of linked to that. But do you know, I as the sort of, you know, 100th point was secured yesterday with a late goal, and you know, this sort of Centurion's nickname suddenly took hold or was being pushed by the club on social media, etc. I thought, do you know, I'm actually pleased that you know, there is something now that makes this a more objective one-off achievement in making 100 points. I don't think 99 points or 98 points or 97 points would have resonated with people in the same way. But in the same way that Arsenal went unbeaten and it became the Invincibles and people recognised that as a great achievement. I mean, 100 points is surely, despite two defeats, isn't that surely a better achievement, 100 points? Better achievement than zero defeats and 90 points, 73 goals, 26 wins and 12 draws. And Man City, 32 wins and 4 draws, 2 defeats. Now, zero defeats is clearly better than 2 defeats, but 32 wins is clearly an awful lot better than 26 wins. And I'm not saying Invincibles wasn't a great achievement. It was a great achievement. And there's a reason why people want to emulate it every season and why we in the media get excited about it. But I think we're more likely to see another team go a season unbeaten than we are to see another team go 100 points. 100 points have never been done in English football before. Invincibles have been done once before. And I'm not saying the Arsenal achievement wasn't great, but I think people need to wake up and realise how exceptional this Man City season is. And if it takes a certain number being hit, 100 triple figures, and for a certain, you know, catchy title like the Centurions to persuade people that this was actually pretty good, then great.
Ollie, is there also an element of the way these teams played and sort of what was the context, the philosophy of the time? Because, as I recall,
you know, yes, Arsenal were invincible, but that season, but they didn't have a giganto lead either. And there were probably situations, or there may have been situations where, you know, maybe they opted to play in a slightly more conservative fashion, or maybe changed the way they managed a game in certain stages. And maybe that's part of the reason why they ended up drawing more games and not losing games. Whereas I kind of feel that with Pep, he's kind of served up exactly the same type of football sort of every minute of the season.
But the thing of having, you know, obviously the Invincibles were great, and yet they won it only by 11 points. Well, that doesn't that suggest that the competition was really strong? I mean, Chelsea, the money had just arrived at Chelsea, and Chelsea were really strong. Man United had gone into a season of rebuilding. A lot of younger players were playing that season. So, you know, it's not a like-for-like comparison, but I would say 100 points is amazing. In 100 out of, what is it, 114? Is that the most you can get? They only dropped 14 points all season. Scored the number of goals they scored.
Too, that, you know, we can look at the table and say Arsenal won it by 11 points, but it's not like they had an 11-point lead all season long. It also had to do with the fact that that season Chelsea were in the, you know, they went deep into the Champions League. I mean, it was a weird season for Chelsea too, because obviously you're Claudio Ranieri, is dead men walking and all this other stuff. But there definitely was, I think, a situation where, you know, the gap was so big because at a certain point, Chelsea put all their eggs in the Champions League basket when they realized there was no way that they were going to catch Arsenal later in the season. And I think at that stage, Arsenal took their foot off the gas a little bit as well, maybe drew a few more games than they would have otherwise. But certainly, you know, if you look at the results the last 2 months of the season, that's pretty much what happened in terms of the lead. So I agree with you. Arsenal, I think, were pushed to the degree that City were not. What's the bigger achievement from a footballer's perspective?
The biggest achievement is a treble winning season for Manchester United. I'll make a point here. When United were winning leagues, Ferguson rested players for the Champions League, knowing that he could lose a game because he had a 9-point lead or a 10-point lead. Pep's never really had this. Okay. They've never really had. Do you understand my point, Ollie? Do you understand my?
Yeah, I do. I agree with it being the greater achievement too.
You know, win the three biggest trophies.
Yeah, okay, but if you really want to go there, winning the Champions League that season is something that chance and probability played a tremendous amount in. So, like all managers, he gave himself the best possible chance to do it,
yeah.
And but they also had to have situations where things went their way, as like in the comeback against Juventus.
You
and obviously,
can say that about any team in any season where no. Situations where they went their way.
Well, no, because
it happens too often for it to be luck.
I'm not saying that they were a lucky team, and what I'm saying is that it's not something you can plan on doing. That's partly what makes it a greater achievement.
Ferguson went into cup finals resting players. So you know, we're talking about this league. Sorry, I'm going off track a little
I know.
But I'm getting the perspective of, you know.
Okay, so Ferguson's better than Guardiola and
Wenger.
If Man
City were in Kiev next week,
and they got 100 points,
would they be flat out yesterday? Would they be?
Probably not, I think is the answer.
Point rested.
But, Ollie, with that in mind, as I recall, I'm going back to this. Am I right in thinking that the year that they absolutely killed it in the league wasn't the year they won the treble?
That's a year
yeah,
after. It was a year after.
They only won it by a point in 99, and then obviously they won the Cup and the European Cup. You know, whenever people say, oh, what are the best Premier League teams, and people say, oh, the Arsenal Invincibles and the treble-winning team, in whatever order, I always felt that United were better the year after the treble. They didn't win the European Cup, but they were a better team. They won the Premier League by an absolute mile. They then ran into Real Madrid in the Champions League and didn't win, but I didn't think Arsenal were as brilliant and mesmerising in 2004 as they were
2002.
In 2002 when they won it. Sometimes it takes these sort of one-off achievements that tell you something different about the team. You know, going season unbeaten, winning the European Cup, winning, you know, three in a row or whatever, as United have done, And I think 100 points probably falls into that category.
It's a phenomenal achievement.
Let's also put this into some context. City got 100 points. The Arsenal Invincibles obviously weren't invincible overall, because over the course of that year, they lost games in the Cups and in Europe. What is for you the greater achievement, James? And then please don't say United, because you only have two options here. Let me make it clear. Think of it as a multiple between these two, okay?
I understand your question. I think getting 100 points, the maximum, if you get more points than another team, surely you've had a better season.
It's a brilliant thing to go a season unbeaten, you know, to have zero in the losses column. But you could do that and get 38 points. You couldn't get, you know, it's not possible to get 100 points without being utterly exceptional. And Arsenal were exceptional in 2004, but I would say 100 points is a more worthy and even more impressive achievement.
We have a story about Mikel Arteta leaving City to go to Arsenal, obviously saying that Pep Guardiola would not stand in his way. I mean, what's Pep supposed to say? Like, no, you can't leave. It's always generally not a good idea to keep on your staff somebody who doesn't want to be there. Ollie, do we have any indication that this is a possibility, or is it more the fact that Arteta is well-spoken, he's been associated with a very successful team at City, he's a former Arsenal player? Is that the thinking? And Arsenal need a manager?
He's definitely in the frame. And I mean, if you had to ask me who I think will get it at the moment, I would say it seems to be pointed towards Arteta. And everything I've heard from people at Man City all season long, this season and last since he went there, is that he is really, really impressive in the work he's done as Guardiola's assistant. He's played a big part and is a real, you know, really intelligent, meticulous coach, which all sounds great. But is that the whole thing of the appeal, or is an awful lot of the appeal based on the fact that he's an ex-Arsenal player and therefore perceived to represent Arsenal values, whatever they may be? I mean, he was there for like 5 years, two of them injured, three of them, you know, playing well, but it was a period where Arsenal's values as a club were probably not as clear as they should have been. And so I wouldn't like them to appoint him on the basis that he personifies or embodies Arsenal values. I think
more importantly, they were Wenger values. And Wenger is a manager that they sent away. So this whole thing is kind of...
It's not a case of appointing a younger manager that the hierarchy can control a little bit easier and sort of fit into the
That opens up a whole other can of worms, as we've discussed in past weeks, is the fact that we don't know what the hierarchy is, because you've got two very influential people who come at it from very different footballing cultures in Raul Sanjehi and Sven Mislintat, and you have a chief executive who comes from yet another footballing culture. So that should be, watch this space, I guess. We're in Southampton. If you're Ralph Kruger or his brother Freddie, do you recommend that they keep Sparky? Or was he just kind of the right man in the right place to get them out, and then you think seriously about who you want to manage your club?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because, I mean, it seems that in May of each year, every Premier League team thinks, "Oh, we need a more sophisticated approach. We need we need to go long term. We need progressive football. We need expansive football." And then, you know, come the winter months, they always seem to think, "Oh, we need a proven, experienced Premier League manager." And Southampton need to work out what they are. They're into a different phase of their Premier League existence now. I mean, they have those early years under Adkins, Pochettino, and Koeman, and everything was going well, but what do they want to be the next 2 or 3 years? They want to be a stable, sensible Premier League team, in which case I think Mark Hughes could do a good job for the next 2 or 3 years, not 5 or 10 years as he showed at Stoke, but I think he would do a decent job.
I have no problem with him, but part of his undoing was, as I think it was Jack Butland who said this last week, was at Stoke he signed Fimmer and Mbula and all these guys who then either weren't there, Jesse, and then totally blow up in his face. I mean, I suppose you could get him simply to go and coach the team and have no say on transfers, which is a little bit it's not the setup there, but certainly the club tried to act independently. The other thing about Southampton is that this is a club has traditionally had one of the strongest academies around and has tried to push kids. I don't know that that's something that he's been able to do at Stoke, or for that matter at Manchester City, mm-hmm. or at Fulham, or Blackburn, or the other clubs he's been at.
You know, if they want to improve and make sure that, you know, there's no repeat of this season, then I don't think appointing him would be a mistake. If they want to set their sights much higher and try and break back into the top seven or eight as they were a few seasons ago, then maybe they need to be a bit bolder. But, you know, I know things unraveled for him towards the end at Stoke, but poor recruitment and so on. But I don't think any sensible look at Hughes' record as a Premier League manager over the last 14 years would define him by 6 bad months at QPR or by 12 bad months.
I'm not suggesting that at all. I just think for what the clubs, and this is why clubs have directors of football, but for what Les Reed, Les Reed's done and set up.
Gab?
Argument.
I can say from a player's point of view, when a manager gets a sack and a new manager comes, it is a very, very unsettling time. You don't know where you stand. The club's up in the air. The new manager has to get used to the staff, the players. Why go and do that all over again? I'm not sure the academy was as strong as what it once was, and I don't think you would want to be a club that then starts again a reputation of hiring a manager to do a job, and he does a job, and then you fire him.
Time now for Goal of the Week. Now, this season, as you know, with your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times, you've been able to watch every highlight and every goal from every game in the Premier League, Champions League, Europa League, and the FA Cup. And by the way, there's still a Europa League final and an FA Cup final to look forward to. So you can continue to get value from that. And you pay just £8 for an 8-week trial. In addition to that, you got all our excellent content, not just our excellent content, but also the content from The Sunday Times. So with this in mind, knowing that you enjoy goals, Scoey, what was your favourite goal of the weekend in the Premier League?
I've gone for Jamie Vardy's second goal, Leicester City's fourth goal at Wembley yesterday. I think it was a classic old school Leicester goal, shall we say, where counter-attacking football at its best, that combination connection, Mahrez into Vardy, fantastic finish. I don't think we're going to see that connection next season with Mahrez and Vardy. I think Mr. Mahrez might be off. But I thought it was an excellent goal yesterday.
I will go for another Leicester goal. Iheanacho's goal at Wembley.
Where he leathers the ball.
Stunning strike. Well, it wasn't just hit it as hard as he could, did he? He hit it in a very controlled way into the top corner. I thought it was a beautiful goal.
Spurs and Leicester, we just referenced the goals in it. I thought this game was an absolute car crash. I did not enjoy the mistakes, the chaos. We thought Leicester were on the beach. Sometimes they have been on the beach. When they play in games like this, sometimes there's no pressure, and so you end up seeing 9 goals. I don't think there's much to say about the game because season's over, but I think there's some musing to be done about Mauricio Pochettino's quotes. Now, this has been an ongoing theme. He's kind of, over the last, I think, 3-4 games, he's after the match, he's always said, well, if I'm here or another manager, or he's talked about the club without using the word we. And at first they said, okay, no biggie, just a slip. But now it seems to me he's very obviously sending us a message. I'm just going to read this quote. He said, "They have a clearer idea of what we need to do. I don't know if the club will agree with me or not, but we need to talk next week to create the new project to try and improve. We need to talk a lot between us and the club. I think Daniel is going to listen, of course. That would be Daniel Levy. You know me, I have crazy ideas. In this moment, you need to be brave and take risks. Until today, it was so difficult to talk about the future. Now we need to decide the way to operate in the future." Now, Ollie, I don't think you need to do much reading between the lines. This is a bit of a power play, yes?
Yes, I would say it's it's not saying he's going to leave. I would say it's setting out what he wants, and maybe if he doesn't get what he wants, maybe that's when Spurs fans would have cause to worry. But I think most Spurs fans or anybody else would agree with him that the club needs to be brave, to be bold, to spend a bit more of the money that they generate. I feel slightly ill saying that because we applaud Spurs for what they do, for doing things on a smaller budget. But the reality is that if they don't spend more of the income they have, they won't keep these players together. They won't keep this excellent team together.
So I'm going to put my contrarian Daniel Levy hat on. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's a Daniel Levy wig in this case. Okay, Poch, but you see, when I give you money to spend for players that you want, you end up buying people like Mr. Janssen, who then you don't like, partly because he's not good. You end up buying Llorente, who it seems like is crucial to us, and then the guy hardly ever gets to play, and when he does play, he's bad. You buy Moussa Sissoko on the last day of the transfer window, and we pay through the nose for him, and he's not in your starting 11. So when I do give you money to spend, this is how you spend it. So why should I give you more money? You buy Lucas Moura, who's also in and out. So what convinced me that I need to go, and most of your good players were bought by other people, convinced me that I need to go and spend money. And who's going to spend the money? You, since we don't have a director of football right now.
Well, the point I was making was that the priority should be about keeping the team together, keeping the squad that they have together and building around it. Because it's hard to find upgrades on the players that they've got within their existing wage structure, particularly when they...
Wait, are you talking about wage structure? You're talking about giving the players that are already here more money, or are you talking about...
Yes.
So you think that's what...
I said that from the start.
Okay, so you think what Pochettino wants is to pay the players he has more rather than going and spending more money to buy... to get a deeper squad.
I think he means to buy players, does he not? I think that's his quote.
Well, that's how I read it, but Ollie thinks otherwise.
But I think Ollie makes a good point. Because if you buy a centre-forward, he's never going to play. Harry Kane's going to play every week. So a lot of these are going... If you buy a midfield player, is he going to get in front of Eriksen or Dembele? Not quite sure he is. I personally would spend the money...
But there are midfielders in the world who are better than Dembele.
Okay, but you've got to spend a lot of money to do that, Gab. I would personally spend the money in tying these players down on big contracts, and I think that would be a better investment for Spurs.
Okay, so you guys seem to be saying that if Poch says we need to spend more money, because Poch also mentioned the net spend.
Want players.
No, I know. But if you're Levy, what you say to him is you say, look, Poch, the best I'm going to do here is extend these guys so that we can hang on to them so that they get competitive contracts and aren't tempted to go elsewhere. And you'll just deal with that. And then beyond that, we'll sign a couple squad players, maybe replace Alderweireld if he goes, and you'll be happy with that. And you'll say, thank you, sir, may I have another, right? Is that the message you'd be sending back to Poch?
And I think he'll want a new contract himself.
Of course.
I think that will inevitably be part of it as well. So, if he was offered the chance to extend a lot of those contracts, and we all joked a few years ago about Spurs players sign a new contract every other week, and Pochettino would be there smiling in the same suit, in the same pose every week with a different player. But those contract renewals have stopped in the last 18 months or so. There is disquiet behind the scenes about wages, about people knowing the money they could earn elsewhere, about knowing that money that average players at average clubs are getting relative to players at Tottenham, and that is the threat to Spurs. I know Spurs fans hate hearing it because they believe all of their players are 100% committed to the cause, and I think they have been, but I think we'll find that if the wage cap, if you could call it that, isn't lifted considerably, I think they'll find out that those players, some of them, are not anything like as loyal as they thought.
Well, which means that you can sell them for a lot of money and buy more players, maybe. What I will say, and where I think Pochettino is 100% correct, is when he's talking about being brave and taking risks. I mean, right, first of all, it's pretty easy to say that in the sense that he's not the one taking the risk. Levy and Tottenham are. But he does have a point, doesn't he, Scully? There's a bit of a window of opportunity here because Arsenal, it's obviously, you know, year zero at Arsenal, right? It's going to be a new manager and so on. So next season is going to be a transition year. It will likely be some sort of transition year at Chelsea as well. I mean, no Champions League football, probably a new manager. So when you look around, you know, obviously City are on another level right now, but you do have a chance that if you go and you roll the dice a little bit, you know, maybe you can challenge. You know, you're ahead of your two regional or local rivals anyway, and you will be next season. Is that a fair argument to make?
Some of it is. I don't think you're going to challenge. You know, if you look at Man City, the strength that they've got.
I don't think you're going to challenge Man City tomorrow, but you can go and you can certainly do a big upgrade while staying ahead of Chelsea and Arsenal.
Because, I think you can cement that top four position without doubt. Do you need new players? Certainly. You know, I think there's a saying that the best time to strengthen is when you're at your best. And I think Tottenham, it's the best Tottenham side I've seen in my lifetime. And I think certainly they need more bodies in. But I would also, they need to break this pay structure at their football club. I think they need to pay players their worth.
The train is now approaching Junction at platform.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Love the game? Then don't miss The Game Daily. It's your lunchtime update from football's finest writers, and it's only at thetimes.co.uk. It's just sort of a little annual tradition. We do our team of the season. I will explain the rules. They're very, very simple. Both Scoey and Ollie have come up with a team of the season. I will adjudicate where there is a dispute or where they say something stupid. Can I have your formations, please?
4-3-3.
4-2-1-3,
which you can turn into a 4-3-3 quite easily, yes? Yeah. Sorry, so let's go 4-3-3. We don't need to debate these if they're obvious. Scoey, who's your goalkeeper?
De Gea, in goal.
Ollie?
Yep, De Gea, hands down.
Yeah, I don't know. Hands down, there's been a lot of good goalkeeping performances this year, but I'm happy with De Gea. Ollie, you're right back?
Kyle Walker.
Scully?
I'm going for Trent Alexander-Arnold, Liverpool.
Okay. Ollie, presumably you believe Kyle Walker is a better choice? Because he's actually a defender, not a midfielder masquerading as a fullback?
It's Kyle Walker.
It's not Trent Alexander-Arnold. I mean, I'm sorry. He may have a great future ahead of him. I'm not even sure he's a fullback. I think in a bunch of games, he's been a liability, and I think it's great that, you know...
Move on, next.
Jesus. I mean, honestly. Your centre backs...
I'm going to go for Vertonghen, and I'm going to go a little bit off. I'm going to go for Harry Maguire.
I would have had honourable mentions for Vincent Kompany, despite the fact he's not played all that many games, but I will go for Vertonghen also, and Ben Mee, not his more heralded defensive partner, Tarkowski. I'll go for Vertonghen and Ben Mee.
All right, I'll live with Vertonghen. I'll go with Vertonghen because I don't think he's had the greatest season. But I also wasn't sure how he'd perform without Alderweireld. And I think he showed that he really stepped up. And he also had moving parts around him, which I don't think made his job easier. The funny thing about Maguire, I like Maguire. I'll go with Maguire over me. The way Burnley defend is so team-oriented and so unusual. Me as some sort of representative of a broader Burnley way, fine. But as an individual, I think you have to go with Harry Maguire. Ollie, your left back.
Andy Robertson.
I think it's a good shout. I've actually gone, and this is purely based on second half of the season, and it's been in the last two or three months, it's been excellent. Patrick Van Aanholt of Palace.
Patrick Van Aanholt was very bad in the first part of the season, and Andy Robertson wasn't playing many games at the start of the year. Mm. I'm not wild about either. I do think Robertson has a decent future, but I'll go with Robertson at this point. I can only pick from the ones you choose. Sorry?
Who would you have chosen, Gab?
I would have probably gone for somebody like Marcos Alonso, who I think, again, while everybody's trying to get rid of him, he provides goals and he provides assists and he provides an aerial threat. And he was voted into the PFA Team of the Year as well. So I'm obviously not the only one who's mad like that, but sure, let's go with Robertson. Your three central midfielders.
I have gone Eriksen, De Bruyne. I'm debating on my number 10 at the moment. Ollie, what have you gone in your midfield?
And your number 10. So one of those two is your holding midfielder. Wonderful.
Mr. We're getting a rotation. Here.
Yeah, okay. Well, help me out. Just pick Fernandinho and just get this over with, please, for the holding guy.
I have
his number 10.
Silva, De Bruyne, and drumroll, Fernandinho. All three Man City. And I think, you know, those three have performed at an absolutely exceptional level all season. Eriksen would be next on the list, I think, for any of those positions. But I'm happy with those three from Man City. They have been that dominant.
I think De Bruyne is unanimous. I'm going to side with Ollie on Fernandinho. So the third slot is going to either be Eriksen, David Silva, or your mythical number 10 that you're going to tell us now who it is.
We'll go with Fernandinho. We'll get Eriksen number 10. I'm happy with that.
You and Eriksen over Silva. Are you okay with that, Ollie?
Well, I would have said Eriksen over Silva if I was happy with it.
Okay, well, you get overruled. Let's not score a bone here.
It's fine. That happens.
Do you guys have a centre forward?
Yeah,
and a real one.
I was going to break loose when I tell you mine, but
because it's Lukaku, I already know. All right, Ollie, give me your front three.
Well, when you said have you got a centre forward, I was very close to Firmino, but I've gone for Kane.
Okay.
Centre forward, and outside of him, I would go for Mo Salah and Leroy Sané.
Scully?
I've gone for Lukaku, and I've picked him because...
Oh, let's get the easy ones out of the way first. Do you agree with any of the other two? Do your other two?
No, I'd go for Salah and...
you do have Salah.
Yeah, and Leroy Sané.
Okay, I'm happy with both. I think Sané is actually vastly underrated still. Shout out to Raheem Sterling as well, who had a monster season. But you can only play so many guys.
Zaha as well. Pushed him a little bit.
All right, easy there. So you say Lukaku and you say Kane. Gentlemen, persuade me. Ollie.
The number of goals and the work rate, when people were suggesting him as a player of the year, as an alternative to De Bruyne or Salah, I don't think he was at that level. I would say I came quite close to putting Firmino, whose all-round game has been better. But Kane, I mean, 40 goals again in a team that he has carried at times. I know the last month he's not looked great. He's looked tired. He's been carrying an injury, I think, but he's been superb.
Scobie's persuading me. You need to be super persuasive to make your Lukaku argument.
No, listen, Harry Kane's a fantastic player. He's had a fantastic season as well. The reason I'm going to go for Lukaku is because I think he's had a good first season. I think always when you come for a big price tag, which he did, it's hard. I think he's done well. I think playing as a number nine in Manchester United's team at the moment is an extremely difficult position, considering the makeup of the team, the dynamics, the lack of movement around, the lack of inconsistency of your teammates as well. I think Harry Kane would have found it a lot difficult playing for Manchester United than what we would have done Spurs. I don't think... Well, Harry Kane has this fantastic connection with Eriksen. I think if you take Eriksen away from... I think you take 20-25% of his goals away from him as well. Lukaku hasn't got anybody like that who's been here. Here's another chance. Here's another chance. I think it's been a real difficult season for Lukaku, and I think he's come
Sanchez,
through.
Sanchez, Mata, Pogba.
Yeah, they're all.
Wonder if there's a broader unconscious message about the manager there with your words, but
maybe.
I think it's a strong case for Lukaku. He's had a good season, but yeah, my vote goes with Harry Kane. So your 2017-18 game podcast team of the year is David De Gea in goal. At the back, Kyle Walker, Jan Vertonghen, Harry Maguire, and Andy Robertson. In midfield, Kevin De Bruyne, Fernandinho, and Christian Eriksen. And up front, Mo Salah, Harry Kane, and Leroy Sané. Thanks for playing.
Robertson and Maguire, you wonder how Hull didn't finish in the top six the previous season, didn't you? But there you go.
Good point. Now, somebody threw this out to me, and this ties in. Ollie actually has a really good piece in the game on Monday, just about an argument that I crap on about all the time, but most people, whether they be fans of United or Arsenal or Chelsea, don't seem to care about, which is polarization, which is this absolute gap between the top six and everybody else. And before people say, oh, but Leicester, yeah, okay, that was a one-off. Generally, the top six are always the top six, even when they have absolute stinkers of a season, as was the case this year with Arsenal. So the question was, if you were to make a team from all the players outside the top six, would they be good enough to finish top six? So to do this, we had to make a team, and then we would decide whether they had a prayer of finishing the top six, and we're gonna debate that then. I'll give you my team first. I have it in a 4-2-3-1, or you can turn it into 4-3-3 if you like. And that's Butland in goal, at the back, Kiko Femenia, Higazi, Harry Maguire, Ryan Bertrand, midfield, Aaron Moy, Doucouré, Pascal Gross kind of in the hole, Zaha and Mahrez out wide, and Jamie Vardy up front. Ollie, what's your team? I'm going to try to organically combine these. Who's your goalkeeper?
This is based on performance this season.
We're not rewarding performance. We're putting together a team that can finish the top six.
I'm sure it's going to be based on performance,
isn't it? Well, obviously, yes.
I'm going to stick with the performance one because I think it's
silly. But go ahead.
It makes the point. I'll go for Nick Pope in goal. I would go for three central defenders.
You can't do that. No three central defenders. Because we're trying to make a team. Come on. Do you have three central defenders?
No.
Okay, so you're in the minority there. Majority rules. 52 beats 48. We're leaving. Deal with it, Ramona.
Almost all the players I wanted to pick were central defenders.
That's fine, but that's why you need to use your imagination.
I will then pick, just to spite you, I will pick a Tony Pulis-type back four with four central defenders across it. I will have Jamal Lascelles as right back. I will have Ben Mee and Lewis Dunk, and then I will have...
So lad Schindler not been better at Huddersfield. Good ones.
Okay,
Schindler,
Maguire. I'll go for Tarkowski at left back.
Mine is Van Aanholt left back, Schindler left hand side, Maguire right hand side. Now, disagree with Ollie. You can't have, if we're going to get into the top six, we've got to be attacking, so we need attacking fullback.
Thank you.
But then my next, I've gone for Loughton at Burnley.
Okay. All right. So from what I can see, and from nobody here seems to like Higazi, possibly because of your anti-Egyptian bias.
It wasn't very good yesterday.
Well, the season was over yesterday. So, with our center backs, we all seem to agree on... Oh, sorry, who's your keeper first?
Pope.
Let's go with Pope. Your center backs, we all agree on Maguire, yeah? So that'll be one.
Yeah.
No, I didn't agree on Maguire, but he was just on my long list. But
okay, good. He's in the team this season.
He wasn't one of the four centre defenders I showed.
Who do you want as your other centre back? If we go with Maguire as one, we
Schindler.
Schindler.
I said me Dunk.
No, I know who you said, but you know.
So
we need to reach a consensus here.
Can I quote a Huddersfield fan today?
No, because we'll get there. We'll digress forever. Forget Schindler. Forget Huddersfield. Come on. Seriously, Wagner. Yeah, oh, look, we played attacking football. And then he goes and he puts eight guys in the box the last two games. Enough, Huddersfield, please. Honestly, I hope they disappear forever. Sorry, Matt Hughes. So no Schindler. We can go with Ben Mee if you like. We'll go with Van Aanholt. left back. And Kiko Femenia, right back. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, fine.
Thank you. Central midfielders?
I've gone for Diarmi at Newcastle.
Okay.
And Milivojevic at Crystal Palace.
Ollie?
I will go for three, which would be Milivojevic, Doucouré, Shelby.
I had Milivojevic on the bench. I'm happy to have him in there. And I had Doucouré too. So let's go with Milivojevic and Doucouré. I think Aaron Moy would have been a really good shout too, but then he plays for Huddersfield, so he loses out. Do we have an attacking midfield figure we want to put in?
I've gone for Shaqiri as a number 10.
Who's your number 10, Ollie?
Pascal Gross.
Yeah, I have Pascal Gross too. So let's go with Pascal Gross. Center forward?
I'm going to go for Jamie Vardy.
Yes, because he's English, so he won't let you down, unlike Arnautovic. Ollie?
I think I've still got two more. I think I've still got another player to pick.
You don't. You just pick your center forward.
Vardy center
forward. Vardy, okay, there you go. Vardy's unanimous. Now we pick two wingers.
Wilfried Zaha.
Yeah.
You're going to just... I'm going for Anthony Knockhart.
Ollie?
I'm only going for one more player, which is Zaha. Because I had three central midfielders.
Right, because you were cheating. All right, I'm going to make an executive decision here. I'm sorry, Anthony Knockhart, and I'm going to go with Riyad Mahrez. Yes? Good player? Yes? Excellent partnership player. With Vardy? There we go.
Whether he had a great season, I don't know.
Right. Knockhart's work rate is a little bit better.
If we were to make our best possible team out of players outside the top six, what we came up with looked something like Nick Pope in goal, Kiko, Maguire, Ben Mee, and Patrick Van Aanholt at the back, Milivojevic and Doucouré in front of the back four, Wilfried Zaha, Pascal Gross, and Riyad Mahrez behind Jamie Vardy. You want to pick a manager from outside the top six too to go and complete the...
Big Sam.
Big Sam. Who's yours?
What it says manager of the season
season thing.
Just
my God, you people.
The best manager outside the top six.
No, not the best manager. Who's the best manager for this team outside the top six?
I would again say Rafa Benitez.
Not a bad shout. Okay, so let's go with Rafa. All right, so Rafa Benitez is your manager. Does this team get in the top six?
No.
Presumably they'd finish above Burnley, right? But this is the point I was making. If this is the best you can do with all the other players in the league,
I think it would finish above Arsenal.
Do you do?
Yeah.
With Rafa?
Yeah, and I would say it possibly would run Chelsea as well. I think it might finish above Chelsea.
Whereas you think, Ollie, think that these players would not be good enough with Rafa, even with Rafa Benitez, to break the top six?
To be honest, the reason why Burnley are the best of the rest, the reason why Burnley are seventh is because they've been built over time and they've got all the quality, that they are so much more than some of their parts. So whether this team of better individuals would even compete with Burnley, I don't know. What I also feel is that top six, it feels like a closed shop despite the rest of the thing. And that feeling was reinforced by being at Burnley yesterday. You've seen a team that's played out of its skin all season and played to the absolute maximum of its capabilities and only scored, a goal a game or something, but managed to finish seventh, which is fantastic by them. But even having made good decisions over a number of years, bought cleverly, built a good team, good teamwork.
Cleverly's at Watford, Ollie.
wisely. Even with all of that going in their favour, they still finished 9 points adrift of an Arsenal team which has been sleepwalking.
That's the okay. So Ollie, I know this is a complex argument, probably one for another time, but and you don't have to tell me what the solutions are. But should the Premier League do something about it? Should FIFA do something about it? Should anybody do something about it? Or is this just kind of an organic free market situation where, it's not really just about the TV money. It's bigger grounds, bigger stadiums, bigger commercial deals. This is the way of the world. Deal with it.
I think it has gone so far in that direction, it would be very hard to do anything about it. But what I cannot stand is the idea that the Premier League and, all the Premier League clubs, including some of whom who will suffer as a result of this, are considering getting behind the big boys' idea that the rich must get richer and the money be distributed less equally in future seasons, which is just going to make that gap even wider. It's going to make...
But commercially, Ollie, the TV money now, yes, it's a big chunk, but commercially, you know, if you look at United and you look at City and you look at Liverpool, they blow the rest away.
Well, you know
away.
What they do in other leagues in other countries, at least in the NFL or the NBA, they just don't just distribute the TV money more equally. They distribute the commercial revenue more equally. I don't even know if you can do that legally or if Manchester United is going to be like, wait a minute. Why do I have to share my money with those freeloaders at Burnley?
We go back 35 years, used to share the gate money.
Exactly. How about some quick hits? Manchester United beat Watford 1-0 to cement second place. Scobie, this was Michael Carrick's last game. Why don't you muse about him while also telling us how much it matters or not that Rui Faria and Jose Mourinho are breaking up after 17 years together?
No, I'm not really interested in, but Michael Carrick has been...
You're not interested in Rui Faria?
No, Michael Carrick...
Oh, I get Duncan
I've only
Castles
got 20 seconds
you.
Here, quickly. Yep. Michael Carrick has been exceptional as a player, not just for Manchester United. I think he's been England's best holding midfield player for a long, long, long time. And to think 2 years ago he didn't go to the Euros and Wayne Rooney played in his position was unthinkable. But he's been a fantastic player.
It's funny, the guy who did that, of course, is a lot of people have him as down as one of the managers of the season, Roy Hodgson. But swings and roundabouts, I guess. Arsene Wenger walks away with a victory and another ovation as Arsenal win at Huddersfield. Ollie, we've all weighed in and tried to provide some context on the great man's career and him leaving. Do you want to have a go too and say something original?
Original is difficult, but I mean, everybody's talked about the football his team played, particularly in those early years. But I would just say, as a journalist, he has been a pleasure to deal with. He has never courted the press. He has never been interested in sort of forging close relationships with journalists, the way some do. But he's always fulfilled every commitment. He's always been very obliging, intelligent, insightful. Win, lose or draw. Sometimes lost, you know, let himself down, comments on about referees, etc. But who hasn't? And he'll be missed by journalists as well as by football fans everywhere.
Nicely put. I let that run a little bit longer because it is a bit of a special case. Now, it's a bitter end of the season for Antonio Conte. After a draw with Huddersfield in midweek comes his 3-0 spanking at the hands of the mighty Rafa Benitez in Newcastle. Scoey, he appeared to question their desire, but then he starts Ross Barkley, who had played exactly 0 minutes since January and 150 minutes all year. What's Conte's problem? What's his logic? What's his mindset?
I think he needs to look at himself, really, doesn't he? Very negative on everything that's Chelsea at the moment. They've actually had a very good run recently and they've almost thought they might creep into the top four, but the last week or so they've been dire. Let's just hope it continues until the weekend.
Oh, said as a United fan, of course, for those who haven't quite worked it out. Speaking of Rafa, he got a mid-table finish with a team which on paper is firmly in the bottom five, even though his owner, Mike Ashley, doesn't like it when we call it a championship team. So, Ollie, how did he do it and what happens next?
I think he did it just by, you know, making them organised, making them hard to beat, making them focused and creating a good spirit about them. I mean, they were an intelligent, hard-working team and there have been nothing like enough of those in the Premier League this season, with the emphasis on the hard work bit. I think too many others have coasted. As for what next, he will always look to upgrade any position where he feels there's a lack of quality and I think centre-forward is really obvious. Yeah, if they got a really good centre forward, they could be a top 8 team.
I'm not sure. I look at this and I look at the number of players who are either substandard or flawed, and they make up, I'd say it's all but two or three players in a starting 11. I think it's been a minor miracle what he's achieved this season, and possibly overshadowed, rightly, by Sean Dyche. Liverpool trounced Brighton as Mohamed Salah breaks the Premier League record with 32 goals, 44 in all competitions. Scoey, you used to score goals for a living. How hard is it to score 32 goals in a league season? And what's the most you've ever scored?
I haven't got anywhere near that. It's a phenomenal achievement. you know, by a very talented player that's literally taken the Premier League by storm. Will he do it next season? I'm not sure he'll do 32 goals, but I think we're going to see a lot more goals from him in the Premier League.
Bob says he can improve. What can he improve on? Or is Klopp just being nice? Yeah,
he's not an out-and-out centre-forward either, really, is he? He's, you know, drifts wide, plays sort of a bit of a free spirit, really. I think he'll improve if he gets better players around him.
Swansea predictably are down. Ollie, play the blame game. Is it really the players and the managers, or does it this go back to Hugh Jenkins?
I think the blame can be, I mean, I'm spread far and wide, but I think managers have had criticism. The board, the owners have had criticism. I would certainly look at the players as well, because I think it goes back. I did an interview with Bob Bradley when he left Swansea, and he said that. Well, he gave the impression, he hinted that he was slightly shocked by the lack of real winning and competitive mentality among those players. And we've seen them have little bounces here and there over the last 3 or 4 years, but this has been a relegation that's been waiting to happen for.
So Hugh Jenkins is just one of many people responsible. The buck doesn't stop with him.
I would say Hugh Jenkins would be nowhere near the top of my list of culprits. I think he's made mistakes, as everybody has, but I think it's not a dressing room that has been full of shining lights of professionalism and dedication over the last few years.
He's the guy who populates the dressing room, though, doesn't he? But hey, that's fine.
I don't think he's a weak link at the club.
Finally, Gab, one for you. Did Juventus finally win the title in Serie A?
Indeed, they did. They drew 0-0 away to Roma. It's 7 straight Serie A titles. Interesting. I think they came out, they said this was probably their most difficult title that they've won. Certainly, they were pushed by a phenomenal Napoli side, who are likely to finish beyond 90 points as well. It's 4 straight league and cup doubles for Max Allegri, and that's when you go out and say, oh well, that's easy, it's because Serie A is rubbish. And while it's not what it was, he's also delivered in Europe with some very good results. In the last 4 years, he reached 2 finals, and on 2 occasions he was knocked out by very strong Bayern and Real Madrid sides, literally with the last kick of the game. And you put these things together and you realize that this is one hell of a manager who's got a ton of resources but really gets the best out of them. Right, that's all we've got time for today. Many, many thanks to my excellent guests, Ollie Kay, even though he was somewhat misbehaving on the show, and James Scowcroft, who is a pleasure to be with. Remember, it's just £8 for an 8-week trial. If you want to sign up for the whole season long, you got highlights of every game in the Premier League, Champions League, Europa League, and the FA Cup. And of course, there's still an FA Cup final and a Europa League final to come. But you also get something which I personally am prouder of, is our excellent content. Not just our paper, but the Sunday Times as well. Now, we're going to be back next Monday after the FA Cup final. Mourinho versus Conte, Manchester United versus Chelsea. Let's hope everybody behaves.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, by airport, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.